He is the Knight. He is Vengeance. And he has one of the best rogues galleries in comics. But who are the top five Batman villains? Hello, I'm Jason Bat-tastic Inman. Welcome to Geek History Lesson, the podcast where we explain a character, a construct, or an object in a little bit less than an hour. But today is going to be a little bit different. Not only is it going to be different because we're going to be talking about a top five list, but Ashley is not in this episode of Geek History Lesson. She is in jolly old England at the time of this recording, but I do have a special guest. You could call this person from my rogues gallery, or you could call this person one of my super friends, but you know him from the YouTube channel Comic Pop and the amazing podcast The Elseworlds Exchange. Welcome, Sal. Sal, welcome back to Geek History Lesson.
Thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, I love always bringing you back because you are just a repertoire of amazing comic book knowledge, and I think you're going to have some interesting picks for top five Batman villains.
Yeah, maybe. Batman's rogues gallery is one of the most iconic rogues galleries, and for good reason. So, you know, we're going to see some colorful characters that, you know, I think everybody is going to recognize. I'm not going to go Tally Man. Like, we're going to actually do something, like, that you recognize.
No Kite Man sneaking into your list.
Please, no. Kite Man. That's like the bane of my existence right
Batman
there.
Batman writer Tom King right now just grimaced. I could hear him right now. Thanks for listening, Tom. Anyways, we are doing this list because there's a little movie coming out called Joker starring Joaquin Phoenix. And in honor of that movie, that's why we're doing the list. But also in honor of that movie, we are going to sit the Joker on the sidelines of this list. Now, the reason why we're doing that, and everybody is shaking their fists at us with mad fury,
Absolutely.
Sal, is Joker number one? For me, if I were to do this list, top five Batman villains, Joker's automatically number one. Do you agree?
No. I think so, especially if you're talking rogues gallery, not just like influential villains in Batman's life. You know, if we're talking about top five Batman villains of all time, Joker's number one. And I'm sure there are those out there who are like, I disagree, you know. And I'm like, listen, the reality is you don't get more iconic than Batman's relationship with the Joker, than the Joker's antithesis of Batman, both philosophically and visually. You know, it just thematically works the most. And he's the most interesting when it comes to telling like the biggest, most bombastic, epic, you know, conflict tales of Batman's life.
I agree. I would also say that you always hear other superheroes, you always hear them when they're talking about their villains, they're say like, oh, this is Iron Man's Joker, or this is Spider-Man's Joker. Like, that has just become part of the sort of pop culture lexicon. Also, at the time of this recording, he's the only Batman villain to have his own solo movie, so I think that automatically bumps him to number one. So, that being said, we both agree, we are tabling Joker as the greatest top five Batman villains. So, this list technically will be the top six, so our number ones will not be the Joker. So, everybody out there, I just want to put that out there. But everybody out there as well, we would love if you would send us your top five Batman villains list. Send them to us at GHL Podcast on Twitter. Also put them at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson. We want to see them. We always love seeing your list. If you want to put Joker as number one, feel free. If you want to put Mr. Zazz as number three, you're one cool mofo. Okay.
Fair enough.
This episode, by the way, was suggested by a couple of our listeners. It was suggested by Leighton Wagner and David McLeod. Thank you so much for being the technical assistants for this episode. All right. So I think it's time.
Yeah.
I think it's time to light up the bat signal and run for our lives because we're talking about villains. Sal, why don't you start us off? Who do you think is number five in your top five Batman villains list?
With number five, you can really go with anyone as long as they are not, you know, within the top two or three. So, this is the one where we're going to get pretty much the most conflicting. I don't think we're going to see a lot of crossover here. I gotta say, I feel like Mad Hatter could be my top five.
Wow. Mad Hatter at number five. Wow.
I really like Mad Hatter. I like the idea behind him. For me, one of the prerequisites for being in the top 10, top five Batman villains, and for being like front and center in the Rogues Gallery photo that nobody takes, is that you got to have a colorful costume, you got to have a really obvious on-the-nose gimmick, and you have to have some kind of tragic backstory. With Tetch and the Mad Hatter, I never really appreciated him as a comic book character until I saw him, of course, in the Batman animated series.
Great episodes.
Exactly. Every episode that he appears in is dynamite. And the way in which he is infused with this like humanity and pathos, he's almost sympathetic, but just quite not enough for you to want to support him. You know, it's like that thing where you go, man, you crossed the line. If you didn't cross that line, I'd feel bad for you. But then you wind up feeling a little bad for him anyway when he of course loses. Mad Hatter is so interesting as a character and as a, like, you can always make a Batman movie with Mad Hatter, and they never have.
Yeah, I agree.
He's got the tech, he's got the unassuming stature, and of course he's got like the creep factor, the whole obsession aspect of him. I love Mad Hatter. I've never really read a really, really excellent Mad Hatter comic book. I mean, I've read comics in which he appears, but none of them have been like, wow, that was great. But just visually speaking alone, for me, top five, I love Mad Hatter, and I just want to see him on a list somewhere. So here he is.
That is such an awesome choice. And you brought up an interesting thing that I'd kind of forgotten about, which is true, is that all of Batman's villains, and I think this is part of the reason why he has such an amazing Rogues Gallery, have a strong design element. And that is something that has been lost recently. There have been a couple Nightwing villains that have been introduced recently that were just men in suits.
Mm.
And I realize the idea that we're trying to make people realistic and try to, you know, like, I understand that maybe the modern comic book reading society would not understand that. But yeah, like, Mad Hatter's design is really cool. Even if you don't like him as a character, he has a distinctive look. Speaking of distinctive looks, my number five Batman villain is I don't know how your list shakes out, but he is the most recently created character of my entire list. My guy wears a colorful luchador mask.
Yep.
My number five is Bane.
Now, that's fair.
Bane, again, when he was first introduced, was introduced as the evil Batman. The idea that he was an orphan, but if this orphan went through everything that was hellish, he would turn into a villain. Like, that's the reason why he grew up in a prison. He had to fight his way out. He became addicted to drugs instead of addicted to justice. And if you read the first story with Bane, the Chuck Dixon Nightfall.
Yeah.
He is a genius. He's so smart, and he tactically takes down Batman, and he breaks Batman. He's one of the few Batman villains to actually have a victory over Batman. Many Batman villains, I mean, I don't even think the Joker has a victory over Batman. You know, like, Bane literally shelved Bruce Wayne for a year.
Right.
Bruce Wayne was not Batman for over a year because of Bane. And I think that's quite impressive. Now, the problem with Bane, and the reason why he's so low on my list, is because later writers turned Bane into nothing but the muscle. But they forgot that Bane is a genius, that he is smart. That is actually one of my favorite things about the Tom King run. Whether you like it, whether you don't like it, I think bringing Bane back to prominence as this strategic villain is the best thing about it. It was the one thing that was great in the Dark Knight Rises was the fact that he was a strategic villain, you know, but of course not his voice of theatrical deception and powerful agency. That's right.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Bane has cemented himself in pop culture with that silly voice.
It has, yes.
And he's also at a movie, but he was created in the 90s. And when you look at him on paper, this Hispanic man who wears a luchador. I actually love the I love the look of the luchador mask, the classic mask.
One. Yeah, for
the
me, classic his one. Design is when it first shows up. It's his outfit is his muscles and his scary expressionless face.
Yes.
Every time that they change it, they're messing with like perfection.
Because yes.
I remember when he first showed up in the animated series and they took away like they cut out his nose and his mouth.
Looks
and I'm like,
stupid.
He looks like a clown.
Yeah, it looks so bad. It looks so bad.
And that, maybe they were clowning him. Like maybe they were just deliberately being like Bane sucks. Like because easily like when Bane breaks Batman's back, you know, Batman just kind of like takes it. But mm-hmm. in the animated series, he immediately just like cuts the tube on his wrist that is clearly gettable and visible. And they're kind of like, yeah, no, Batman would never have been defeated by Bane. He's so lame. Let's make him look more silly. But, like, I love the look of Bane.
Yes, that mask, by the way, designed by Graham Nolan, one of my favorite Batman artists.
Wow, unsung, yeah.
Yeah, he's a Batman artist that a lot of people forget. But, yeah, but that's the problem with Bane. I think that's the reason why Bane would be low on everybody's list is because that's what he became, is this guy of, like, all I got to do is unplug the thing. It's sort of what Mr. Freeze sometimes let's just say an uncreative writer writes Mr. Freeze. It always right. becomes like, how can we trick him to walk into the desert wing of the museum or something? You know, it always becomes that where he's like, no, like, you know, he can be defeated in more ways than just turning the heat up, guys.
Right. Or with chicken soup or just reminding him that his wife is still alive.
If we put a coat on him, he'll sweat and he'll give up.
Exactly.
But Bane is... again, he just, I mean, he did strike a very big part of my childhood. I mean, I was a kid reading Nightfall, and I just remember thinking, being like, yeah, the Joker's never been this bad to Batman. Like, this guy, they're still publishing Nightfall, even to this day. It's 30 yeah. years old now, and they're still, it's never gone out of print. And I think Bane is the biggest reason why. That's why he's my number five. Sal, who is your number four?
Man, we're getting down to the wire here. I'm gonna pick this character for number four because, again, there are so few really, really, truly great stories that feature this character. But he's such a great character and has the potential for a truly breakout tale. It's Mr. Freeze.
Agreed.
For me, yeah, right? Like, I don't have, off the top of my head, like, two or three or even one excellent comic book Mr. Freeze story that, you know, is in the prominence. I remember there was they recently tried to bring him back during the New 52 and they mucked with his origin. And I'm like, that's the only thing that works about Mr. Freeze.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
No, go ahead.
The one Mr. Freeze story that really stands out to me, and it was because it was written by Paul Dini when Batman and Robin came out mm-hmm. in 1997, DC released these sort of not quite graphic novels, these sort of prestige format, oversized format, one shots for all the villains. So you got one for Mr. Freeze, you got one for Poison Ivy, you got one for Bane, and you got one for, I believe, Batgirl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember them doing that. Yeah.
And the Mr. Freeze one was written by Paul Dini.
Oh.
And it's just this really nice one shot of Mr. Freeze. It's kind of the Bane one, by the way, is really good as well. But that's one of the, I don't know if it's ever been collected, but mm-hmm. that's one of the ones that I know it like really stands out to me. And if I can remember, listeners, I will try to make sure that we share it on our social media.
Yeah. Oh, they did that for Batman Forever as well. There's a great like one shot for mm-hmm. Two-Face and for Riddler.
But yes, back to, so I'll just let you know real quick too, Mr. Freeze yeah. is not in my top five, but he would probably be my number six. He almost just made it.
Exactly. For me, it's just he's just so striking and so tragic and so real. And I love that character. It was actually recently I picked up a copy of Batman Adventures, the holiday special. This one features they actually adapted it into the show as well. But originally
it's really
it was a
good.
Comic. I think Batgirl fights Clayface and whatnot. But there's a story that they did not animate in which Mr. Freeze escapes Arkham and causes it to snow in Gotham on Christmas Eve. And or maybe it's Christmas Day. It doesn't matter. The point is, Mr. Freeze makes it snow. That's it. And so Batman tracks him down and he finds him and he gets him. And Victor just says, like, he's in the graveyard and he's at Nora's grave. And I guess it takes place after Sub-Zero or something. But he says like, something to the effect of, like, you know, when I first met her, our first Christmas together, it snowed. And I didn't want to imagine that Nora would be sad on Christmas. And you're just like, oh, way to go. That's the kind of shit I want.
Stuff yeah. I want. Let me ask you this. Do you think that they could... would Mr. Freeze be one of the Batman villains you'd want to bring back to the movies?
Totally.
Okay.
For me, I want the fantastic in my Batman movies. Like, one of my characters that doesn't make this list is another character that I would love to see in a Batman movie because it's the way to visually distinguish, like, this isn't a Nolan movie. Don't get those ideas in your head. And it's Clayface. Like, Clayface and Mr. Freeze are those two villains you can put into a Batman movie and your audience goes, oh, okay. Like, there may be realistic things in here, but I'm not supposed to take it literally. Like, I'm not supposed to expect... like realistic stuff to happen. I'm not supposed to expect this to be like a gritty crime drama.
Yeah.
And Mr. Freeze could work, so you could balance those two halves of Batman, like the fun, you know, like cerebral, gritty crime, Law and Order type story, and the fantastic comic book superhero freeze gun element.
Clayface would make such a good Batman movie. That's right. I totally agree with that.
Right, but he's not on my list, but like Clayface is that where it's like, no, dude turns into a giant clay monster, can become anybody. Like, oh, okay, I know what to expect from this movie, I'm in.
Yeah.
And just get Perlman.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. All right, so my number four is a villain that we have seen in the movies. But I think he just melds so well with the character of Batman. Like, he seems like one of these perfect villains for him. Mm-hmm. And that is Scarecrow.
Yes.
By Jonathan Crane. It's just because this guy, who is this psychiatrist turned costume villain who can weaponize fear, and Batman gets jacked with it, right, and can see his nightmares, and we can learn whatever those nightmares are. They're still telling that story today.
Yeah.
Like, even right now in Batman comic books, the next time we see Scarecrow, you're going to find out that Batman was accidentally sprayed with the fear gas and he's going to have a nightmare. That's always a possibility. Like, Batman can't defeat this. Like, Batman can't defeat his fears. And it's also one of the reasons why I remember one of the very few first episodes of Batman the Animated Series I saw was the first appearance of Scarecrow. I think it's like episode 3 or episode 4.
Right.
It's the very famous one where when Scarecrow sprays him with the gas, Batman's hanging off the building and he sees like the giant ghost of his father. And that's the classic. This is the one where Batman goes like, I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman. Like, that's where that's the episode where that line comes from. And I can remember when I saw that sequence immediately being like, oh, yeah, Scarecrow is one of Batman's best villains. Like, 100%. And I even thought he was well utilized in Batman Begins. And I mean, he's kind of goofy. Like, I also find it depends on which artist draws him, because sometimes he looks like the Scarecrow from Wizard of Oz, and when he looks like that, he looks goofy. But when you get an artist that does a really good, like, I would say Tim Sale does a good job of this, like, when he
Definitely.
Looks like a real Scarecrow, he becomes intimidating. That's one of the reasons why I loved the Bruce Timm redesign for season 4, where they put the hangman's noose around his neck.
Yeah.
And he became a little bit bulkier. It's very, very scary. But that's the reason. I mean, Scarecrow is just simple. Like, yeah, he makes Batman scared.
Yeah. No, it's true. Also, one of the things we didn't mention about, like, an aspect of each of these characters is, for me, I love to really, really pin these characters to the protagonist. So it's like, with respect to the things that make these characters Batman's rogues, is they all kind of like embody or pervert some aspect of Batman's character. And Batman relies on fear in order to be effective when it comes to superstitious, cowardly criminals. And so, as such, like, Crane is one part of Batman, and he completely goes full tilt into fear. And as such, like, Batman has to face that kind of fear. Like, for him, it's like, I manipulate it and I use it when I'm, you know, active. But then there's this guy whose whole shtick is fear, and he points it at me and I have to master it. And for that, I love to see Scarecrow in those stories. I like to imagine Scarecrow is like a formidable opponent. He's the first villain that Tim Drake fights in like right before he becomes Robin.
Oh, is he?
And yeah. And Drake has to overcome the visuals, like, the, you know, the hallucination of his mother being killed. And he does. And it's just kind of like, I like that connection for Scarecrow, that like a Batman villain is given to this like new member of the Bat family. And it's like, you know, you're part of the family now, son. Here you go.
It does. It is sort of a thing in the Batman family where every right? sort of Bat family member has to go through their Scarecrow gauntlet.
Right, exactly.
In the Nightwing solo series, they did the same thing, and Chuck Dixon wrote Robin and Nightwing at the same time, so maybe this is the reason why, but like Nightwing uh-huh. issue 8 of the first Nightwing solo series is Dick fighting his way through this nightmarish hospital caused by the Scarecrow.
Right. And that's, yeah, Scarecrow creates great opportunities for story, and when he's done right, he is a kick-ass design, and a really fun element of the video game.
Mm-hmm. Apologies for the interruption, citizens, but support for Geek History Lesson comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below the belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and family jewels is something I, Batman, would know about. Did you think I was not going to show up on an episode of a podcast where you're talking about my greatest villains and not listen to everything you can about the intelligence of said villains in order to take them down? Well, I'm here because let me tell you this. One time when I was running after the Mad Hatter, the Batsuit nicked the old kangaroo apples, if you know what I'm saying. And that would not have happened if I had been a customer of Manscaped and their redesigned electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts or my bat nuts. You don't want to use the same trimmer on your face as you're using on your balls. You need the right tools for the job, the right bat tools, and I'm here to tell you all about them. If you want to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code GEEKHISTORY, that's GEEKHISTORY at manscaped.com, your balls will thank you. This is such a good idea that I wish I, Batman, had thought of it first. So get 20% off, free shipping, and a free travel bag with the code GEEKHISTORY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping and a free travel bag at manscaped.com. Use code GEEKHISTORY. And now, back to the show. All right, Sal, who is your number three?
Two-Face.
Oh, Two-Face is your number three. You didn't go for number two?
I know. Theming. I couldn't do it. I can't bring myself to do it because as much as I like Two-Face as a character, like objectively speaking on paper, I think Two-Face is a terrific villain. For me, when Two-Face shows up in a Batman story, my eyes glaze over and I'm like, ugh, I don't care. I've seen this 1,000 times. What is he going to do that's different? Surprise, it's nothing. I can't bring him up to the top two slots. But I do appreciate that, you know, you remember that line in All-Star Superman when Lois Lane asks Superman why he chose her, like he could be with anybody and he chooses her. And he says, well, Lois, there's got to be one thing I can't help. Two-Face is the same thing for Batman, where it's like, I know that literally I go out in the night and I beat up the mentally handicapped and the impoverished. But there's just this one guy I feel bad about. And so I'm always going to try and help him. And that's Harvey Dent. And for me, I'm just like, that's interesting. Like, why is Batman such a hypocrite for that one guy? And when you, of course, tie it in with his origins and you know who Harvey Dent is and what he means and what he represents. And, you know, the movies kind of play it up a little bit more than the comics. But Harvey Dent means something to Batman. And as a Batman fan, I appreciate that and recognize his value. So that's why he's my third, but not my, you know, not my top two.
I am just going to couch that because I do have Two-Face as higher on my list.
Right. Fair enough.
So it's all
yeah,
it's all,
yeah. I don't want you to.
It's all right. Good. It's all good. I guess we should have stated this early on. That these are our favorites, not yes. what we are calling an objective best list.
Oh, no.
Because nobody's opinion is right. Nobody's opinion is wrong. So
that's right.
Get over it.
Yeah.
All right.
Opinion.
I still, it would have been very interesting for you to put Two-Face as number two. And now,
oh, of course.
It's very, maybe that's where I'm going with it. I don't know. You'll find out later. Okay. My number three, Sal, if we're just going to move right on, is mm-hmm. The Riddler.
Nice.
I think the Riddler is a very interesting villain. I think he started off as a very goofy villain, but I like the more recent thing that I believe this was started by Paul Dini with the idea that the Riddler is just as smart as Batman.
Yes.
And is sort of almost a detective like himself. Now, the Riddler got a little goofy, thanks to Jim Carrey. He also got a little goofy, thanks to Frank Gorshwin, and coming up with these ridiculous deadly games and puzzles and testing him. But you have to say this, the Riddler has one of the coolest Batman Rogues Gallery costumes of all time.
Yeah.
The question marked green jacket really stands out. The question mark cane really stands out. Now, interestingly enough, I kind of have the problem with the Riddler that you have the problem with Two-Face, is that I kind of feel like every time they pull the Riddler out, it's kind of the same story over and over and over again. And to be honest with you, it's hard for me to name my favorite Riddler story because I kind of have a little bit of problems with all with a bunch of them.
No, it's true.
Well, I mean, I also realize from this aspect, too, that it must be insanely difficult to write a character that is supposed to be as smart as Batman, because Batman is already super smart. He's a genius. And then you're trying to write this guy that is trying to trick the already smartest guy in the room.
Exactly.
It is really hard. Plus, riddles are hard. Like, riddles are hard to write. And we, at this point, we know every regular riddle. Like, people just out in the normal lexicon, we know riddles. So the Riddler has to, his riddles have to be like a step up.
Yeah.
But a lot of the reason, I'm just going to say this right now, is I think the Riddler has an amazing look. I think the Riddler totally needs to be used in a movie. Even though at the time of this recording, the rumors are saying that the next Batman movie that we're going to get is possibly Long Halloween. Would be really cool. I kind of think we need to get the Riddler in there as soon as possible, because he's one of these bigger Batman villains that hasn't been, I would say, done right. We have the Jim Carrey version. Carrey played him goofy and over the top.
He is the Gorshin. The Gorshin one.
Yeah, he's so over the top. He's ridiculous. And the Riddler wearing tights, I don't know why they decided to make that decision. But he's one of these villains that I think would translate so well to film. Because especially if you think about his riddles being ransom notes.
Right.
Thinking about it that way. Sal, what do you think about the Riddler? And if this is a choice further on your list, you can choose to either not say or you can join in.
Right. I do have the Riddler on my list, and he may be next. So I'll only say that I agree with you that he deserves to be on this list, and he is an excellent choice.
Well, then let's roll. All right. Let's just Sal, who's your number two?
My number two is the Riddler.
Okay, well then, man. Well, let's hear your Riddler thoughts, my friend.
Let's talk some more about the Riddler. He is as smart as Batman, or at the very least, he thinks he is. And it's great because it's like Batman's intelligence is applied to justice and the mission, and you know, it's tempered by a million other aspects of Bruce's character and personality, whereas Nygma only focuses on that one thing and values it above all others. So that's how Batman's able to outthink him, because Batman is able he has multiple intelligences, so to speak. And I love the Riddler as that kind of like, you know, perverted version of Batman's intelligence. I agree with you that it's nigh impossible to tell really good Riddler stories nowadays, because like, not first of all, if you're doing a Riddler story, it has to be one shot. Otherwise, people are going to Google all your riddles and you're done. Secondly, you know, if you're going to write a genius, most comic book authors aren't. And so it's kind of really stretching to make it work. You either have to make your protagonist dumber, which nobody wants to do, or you have to like really work hard. And, you know, most writers in general are interested in telling a story as opposed to like achieving, you know, criminal geniushood. So when it comes to the Riddler, I find that his whole shtick, the entire premise behind him, is often marginalized in favor of him doing something effective that advances the story. But if that's the case, that's kind of all he is. So you're left with just this guy who could lose in a fight with Batman. So what else do you have? there are very few good Riddler stories. Some would argue Hush is kind of a Riddler story, especially the animated version.
Actually, I was going to say, you know, and this is no spoilers for the animated version. This is spoilers for
the book
that came out in 2004. So it's revealed in that the Riddler is actually the secret behind, you know, controlling Hush, and that he knows that Batman is Bruce Wayne. I wanted to bring that up because as we were talking about it, and I said I couldn't think of many good Riddler stories. When you think about it, Hush is a Riddler story. And to be honest with you, he kind of became interesting to me when he learned Batman's identity.
Right. Because that really got me when Batman says, "What time is it when an elephant sits on a fence?" And he's like, "What are you talking about? It's time to get a new fence. Why would you say that?" And he's like, "Because a riddle that everyone knows is a riddle not worth telling."
Mm-hmm.
And Riddler's like, "Oh." Like that level of obsession. Literally, anytime I think of the Riddler, I think of John Glover's performance from the animated series and the moment when Batman, the riddle that Batman has for Riddler is not a riddle. It's like Bilbo's riddle for Gollum, where it's just like, are you clairvoyant? But Riddler is being carted off to Arkham and he's just like screaming. He's at the top of his lungs about like, how did he know? I have to know. Like that level of obsession where he's like, he wears a bowler hat, he's got his jacket, he looks really put together, he's really suave and debonair. But the second that he is in any way put in a position where he doesn't know, he is just a raving lunatic. I love that dichotomy.
Yes.
And if they do it right, like they did in Hush, which is odd, but you know, and in the comics, then you've got something special and you've got a good Riddler story, which is again hard to find, but still. Yeah, I agree. I want to see him in a movie like as soon as possible. I want to see that Riddler. I don't want to see another like bespandexed, you know, Joker ripoff, which, by the way, like Riddler is a Joker ripoff.
He is 100%
straight up. I mean, I think Joker references it. I remember I was reading a book. I think it's called Batman Ego Trip. And Joker is just like, "You're a ripoff of me." He just completely took my shtick and, you know, but themed it to one aspect of jokes. Man, I one time I said on our show that we would love to see a Joker versus Riddler story, and then we got one, and I take it back.
All right. Well,
who's your number two?
My number two is probably somebody that a lot of people are going to give me flack about, but she is a villain.
Uh-huh.
And I think her connection to Batman is very strong, and that is Catwoman.
Okay, I did not see that coming.
Well, okay, so this list is villains. Now, you know, we're not going to talk too much about what's going on now because that will instantly date this show, and we want it to be enjoyable for the people of 2050. Hello, future people.
Hey.
But Catwoman, for me, and the reason why she's one of his best villains is because she is evil, but she's also good. She is an anti-hero, but the fact of why she's such a good villain is because she can bewitch him that way.
Mm-hmm.
And because he lets you go, like, well, you brought up this problem with Two-Face and Harvey Dent and you saying like, you know, well, why is Batman, you know, release his moral code for Harvey? Well, he releases it for Catwoman as well.
He definitely does.
You know, I mean, he lets his, let's say, libido get ahead of himself. But see, that's the thing, is that also is the reason why I think Catwoman is one of his best Batman villains, because she uses it against him for whenever it benefits her.
Absolutely.
And, you know, she also, so.
Yeah. I wasn't even sure. You're not even sure really if she really cares about him.
That
makes it really interesting.
And that's what makes her a great villain, is what I would say. Now, again, you go back to Batman number one, where she shows up as the Cat and she is trying to steal the diamond on the ship. I remember I got to read a reprint of that a very, very long time ago. It was like an oversized reprint that a friend of mine had. And my friend tried to tell me that was actually Batman number one. And I remember I believed it at the time. But now, you know, several years later, I was like, no, that was not Batman number one. That was a reprint of Batman number one. But anyways, ever since that moment, I have loved Catwoman. And I've said this on this podcast several times. I do think Catwoman is Bruce Wayne's Lois Lane.
Right.
And Batman number one is one of those ideas. But to me, it makes sense that the person he would fall in love with would be a villain, because Bruce Wayne is this complex, weird machination of right and wrong and justice and my own self-worth and all this stuff. And the fact that this man with this absolute moral code would fall in love with a criminal that would just tear him up inside is such juicy story material to me.
Definitely.
And, you know, and also, like, she has so many great costumes. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever seen a Catwoman costume that I didn't like. Mm. You know, even the silly goofy ones where she has a tail, like she.
Yeah, that purple one.
Yes. Well, she's visually distinctive. She looks out. We've gotten two versions of her. We'll probably see a third before in the next 10 years. But it's interesting because even if you look at like what is going on in the comic books right now, and what is going on in the comic books right now is it looks like Batman and Catwoman are in love and that she's a good guy. She's going to go back to being a bad guy very soon. I have no doubt about that. Yeah, you can't avoid it with this character. Yes, you cannot leave this character in a place of permanence. She will go back to being a villainess. And I loved your point where you said you're never certain about what she actually thinks. And I think that makes her a true villain.
Definitely.
I really do. But when you think about top five Batman villains for me, mm-hmm. and you know, if you were to make the we've discussed this before, the Mount Rushmore of Batman villains, Catwoman's face is up there. Like,
definitely.
For me, it's like no doubt. Like there's a reason why they keep putting her in the movie in the movies and making versions of her. It's because her character is so compelling. And that to me is why she's one of the best Batman villains.
And so many different versions too. Like I was actually watching Returns the other day. It was on. And I think it was easy to dismiss because of the like overt one dimensionality of certain aspects of that movie. But like, I really like her. Like, I love Michelle Pfeiffer's portrayal. Mm-hmm. I love the look of that costume. And more importantly, I love what they're doing, what they're saying about who she is and who Bruce is. And when the two of them are on screen together, it's like really, really compelling. And it's something that as a kid, I was like, I didn't care. You know, it was like, I just want to see Batman blow stuff up and fight these people. But like that Catwoman stuff is really juicy stuff. And then, of course, again, Dark Knight Rises. I really like Anne Hathaway as Catwoman.
I think she has a
totally different version.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I like her version of Catwoman. I'll say this. She's never really Catwoman in that movie, but she's a great Selina Kyle.
Right. Yeah.
In that movie.
She's as close as she can get that Nolan will let her be.
It's actually one of my favorite parts of that movie for the problematic aspects of that movie.
Yeah. The only thing that I don't care for is just like we don't get enough. For me, like of her. I like it's funny, just really quick. You mentioned their relationship and like how, you know, he's an avenger of justice and she's, you know, morally ambiguous. Of course he fell in love with her. It's the least easy solution. Like for Batman, nothing can possibly be easy mm-hmm. or simple. And, you know, the dude, when he was 8 years old, decided to declare war on crime. Like, the all of crime everywhere, all of it, like an unwinnable war, so to speak. So of course he's fallen in love with a person who arguably isn't even close to she doesn't even want to be good.
Yeah.
So I just like that. Like the Batman, like, of course it's complicated. It has to be.
It's so funny. Your statement you just said there, about Catwoman made me think. I was once talking with another comic book writer friend, and we talked about how Bruce Wayne is the type of person that if he were to take out the garbage, let's say he took out the garbage to the curb, right?
Yeah.
And the garbage men come up and one of the garbage men have a bruise on the side of their neck. Batman's the type of guy that he would become obsessed with that garbage man's life to figure out whether that bruise is nefarious or whether that man needs help. And he would never let it go until he figured it out.
And it's funny because for Batman, you know, he's the world's greatest detective. It probably wouldn't take too long for him to figure out anyway.
No.
So it's not an inconvenience. But you're right. Yeah.
But it'd be one of those things where like he would spend an hour or two on it and Alfred would be like, what are you doing? Stop.
Right. Like, this is not even borderline obsession. This is obsession.
All right. So we are here to the number one. Sal, who do you think is the best Batman villain not named the Joker?
Man, my number one, and this is going to be controversial because it's like, we'll see.
Stiltman.
It's Stiltman from Marvel.
Never saw that coming.
No, it's Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Thank you. I love Ra's al Ghul, and Ra's al Ghul can, and the reason why I picked him is because I love their relationship. I love the like fact that, you know, Batman is this mythic, enduring, you know, everlasting thing, this totem, if you will. And it's like, it'll never die. Batman will never die. But Ra's al Ghul really literally will never die. And so they're destined, like, you know, Joker says it in Dark Knight, like, we're destined to do this forever. No, Batman and Ra's al Ghul will be fighting forever. And so as such, like, you better get used to this conflict. And the whole, like, when you're used to a Batman story, it's like Batman in an urban setting fighting criminals that are usually colorful reflections of himself. And then also there's this like James Bond globe trotting immortal character who wields swords and practically loves him like a son, who also must destroy him and turns it into this kind of like Arabian, you know, James Bond globe hopping adventure story. Like it's such a great palate cleanser character. Mm-hmm. And he can, and because of his resources and his reach and his, you know, empire and his machinations and intelligence and all of that, it's he can do all those things. Like you can get the like the sword fight, but you can also get the like mysterious mystery plot where he's got to like crack some kind of code, and at the end of it, it's Ra's al Ghul. And you know, when he's got to deal with one thing or another, like it could be you get all of the Batman stories you want from one character. You know, if you want a bruiser fight, you know, Ra's has, you know, those characters in spades, like to throw at Batman and see a fisticuff fight. You want to see a more, you know, nuanced kind of battle of wits, like you get that with Ra's. You want to see a sword fight, boom, Ra's. Like you get all of those things, plus romance and intrigue and love from the Talia angle. So I don't know. For me, you get the most bang for your buck. He's like, for me, like the Justice League of villains for Batman, where it's like, I if my choice is between buying a book with one superhero or five superheroes, I'm going to spend my money on the five superheroes because I get more for my money. If I got to choose one villain, it's going to be the one that gets me the most variation for my buck, and that's Ra's.
Yeah, it's interesting. See, I call him Ra's al Ghul because
I know. Well, the movie does, and it literally is. You can tell based solely on this list how much my love of Batman was informed by the animated series.
Oh, that's nothing wrong with that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I did read the comics too, and I continue to this day. It's just like, I don't know, for some reason that show distilled like the basic, most like appealing elements of all those characters into this kind of like here they are.
It's hard not, we talk about it a lot on this list, it's hard not to look at that as the definitive versions of most of the Batman characters, because they distilled them down to the purest concepts and they picked the right ones.
Yes.
Now I was going to say about Ra's, I just say Ra's because I think Ra's sounds just kind of a little goofy. I get that, right. That's probably exactly how you should say
it. I am sure it's Ra's.
But anyways.
I just don't care.
But he almost made my list as well, because, and but the reason I left him off is because I think of Batman, I like to think of Batman as a street level character. I know he's not a street level character anymore, but I guess that's the type of Batman stories I prefer. Those are the Batman stories that I like. Ra's al Ghul, you're so right. One of the best episodes of Batman Beyond, which is one of my favorite series, is the Ra's al Ghul episode.
It's so good.
And how they twist it is so good. One of my favorite Legion of Superhero stories was done in the early 2000s by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, the guys who created the modern Guardians of the Galaxy. And they introduced that Ra's al Ghul is still alive in the 31st century, and it was so good. So I totally agree with you, and you said it perfectly. He's a great palate cleanser, because a lot of Batman's villains are all psychologically tortured and da 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 da. Ra's is not. Ra's is like, no, what I'm doing is right. You're wrong.
Exactly. Yeah, he's nuts, but. Or not, you know, like, or he's just like,
not really. He's not really nuts. Yeah. He's kind of in the right.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, well, it depends on which version you're going with.
Yeah. It just depends on like his methods to do that right thing or where he goes wrong.
Exactly.
But his opinions are kind of right. Right.
Yeah. No, he's sympathetic. And yeah. And it's also, and it's not one of those things like when I pick Mad Hatter where it's like you feel bad, like, oh, like I want you to succeed because maybe if you had a taste of success, you might actually not be a monster. With Raish, it's like, no, I don't want you to win. And I also get it. But I get it. Like,
by the way, if you, do not have this action figure, we're going to do a little action figure spotlight on the Geek Culture Lesson right now. The DC Collectibles version of the Batman the Animated Series line made in an amazing Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, I've got two of them.
You have two of them? Wow, I do love him.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Neither of them are opened. I should open one at least.
Oh, I open all. Man, you got to play with your toys. Come on now.
I know. I do. But then I like looked at them and I'm like, I have so many of these animated series figures. I also have those great Justice League Unlimited figures.
I do too. I will say, action figure spotlight, everybody. I have all of the Batman the Animated Series figures except for Scarface.
Oh.
I need to get Scarface. That's the one I need. So if any of the listeners out there.
There's a store here. I see him all the time.
Oh, my God. Maybe I have to have you send them to me. but anyways, yeah, the Ra's al Ghul figure is great. The Talia al Ghul figure is great. But also what's great is my number one choice.
Yes. What's your number one choice?
Well,
I'm dying.
It's already been revealed. Two-Face.
Really? Number one?
Okay. So I'm putting him out here. The reason why I like Two-Face is because he is a version of Bruce Wayne who, if he had stayed within the law. A lot of people like to say that that's Commissioner Gordon. I disagree with that. Commissioner Gordon's Commissioner Gordon is Alfred and Thomas Wayne's contemporary.
Right.
But Harvey is Bruce's contemporary. And to be honest with you, I love the versions of Batman where Bruce and Harvey are friends.
Yes. Absolutely.
Those are the best. I don't like where they've gotten rid of that. You know, I like the little pieces that we got to see in The Dark Knight. The animated series, Batman the Animated Series, go mad, that has an amazing two-parter about Two-Face, and they established that Bruce and Harvey are best friends. And the reason why I like Two-Face is because Two-Face is the literal representation of Batman's journey. And Bruce figures, the way I always see it is that Bruce figures that if he cannot save Harvey, then he's doomed to be Batman and to fight these scumbags for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And secret, I mean, revelation to Bruce, you're never going to defeat crime, dude. You're never going to stop crime. So guess what? You're never going to cure Harvey.
No.
But
he's always going to let you down.
Yes, exactly. No matter how many times you fix his face, which I think they've done that three times in the comics now.
At least.
And he keeps scarring it again. Mm-hmm. But the idea, too, that he's a former lawyer, you know, he gets scarred half physically, you know, by the mob assassin, like trying to throw a vial of acid on his face. That is an amazing origin. It's one of my biggest complaints about Batman Forever where they did Two-Face. Well, one, not only was he a Joker knockoff,
right?
Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy Lee Jones, by the way, was a great casting choice for Two-Face. It's too bad that they didn't let him play Two-Face.
It's so weird. What a weird decision.
But there's a great flashback where they show this. They show footage from the trial where the guy throws the acid and you see Batman leaping. And I remember the first time I ever saw that movie, even then in like 96, thinking, that's the movie I want to see. Where's that movie?
Yeah, not the one where he's dressed like a lion tamer. Like,
yeah, let's do the origin of Two-Face. Why did we just assume it happened off camera? No.
For me, I was like, why is Batman fully dressed and jumping out of like the jury box? Like, where did he come from?
But the other thing I love about Two-Face, and the reason why Two-Face is my number two, and I do agree with you. And this is we could talk about this a little bit after the end. There aren't a lot of great stories with Two-Face, but we've said that about a lot of characters in this list.
It's true. The fact is, Batman's villains are compelling and interesting and fun and great, and like they are. There's a reason why there are only a couple of iconic rogues galleries in general, but and then you whittle it down further, like not a lot of these characters actually can hold a spotlight for too long.
I'm gonna tell you why I think the reason why we keep repeating that these characters don't have good stories.
It's because
it's the same problem with the Fantastic Four. Every new writer that gets the Fantastic Four wants to tell their Galactus story.
Yes.
Every writer that gets Batman wants to tell their Joker story.
Yeah.
And because of that, we have so many mediocre Joker stories. We do.
Right.
And we've said this argument, by the way, on the podcast. Ashley and I have said this several times. I would love to hear your opinions on it. But anyways, okay, so Two-Face, he's my number one. I just think he has so much potential. But let's talk about this a real bit. They little cap this off our list here. Ashley and I said this several times at Geek History Lesson. We know DC will never do it, especially with the movie coming out. We think DC should table the Joker for a couple of years.
Oh, absolutely.
Just take him off the table. Because then when he comes back, he's going to matter. But the problem is he's like in every story now. And we have to have like, well, what does the Joker think about Batman's wedding? What does the Joker think about this final infinite crisis? What does the Joker think about this? That he's showing up in every comic book now that...
Where he doesn't even belong.
Where he doesn't belong. He's not a threat.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first started reading Batman, and then and maybe this is my perspective, but I can remember especially reading, you know, Night's Fall and Night Quest. The Joker didn't show up for quite a while in that storyline. Yeah. And when he did show up, it was to meet the new Batman and he figured out that it wasn't Batman. But when he showed up, it was a big deal because even Tim Drake was like, oh, man, I don't know if you're going to be able to take down the Joker because you're a brand new Batman. What do you feel about this? Again, we've said this. We almost said that statement that all these villains don't have good stories. I blame the Joker. What do you think?
I think a friend of mine who didn't read comics when this there was a big retcon for Batman's entire history, and it's one that I still to this day disagree with. When they resurrected Jason Todd, that was the time to get rid of the Joker for at least 2 years. What they needed to do was have Jason, because remember when Jason Todd, when he first shows up and he's the Red Hood and he beats the Joker with his own crowbar, he should have killed him. Kill the Joker and say, like, listen, your greatest nemesis, the reason for your greatest failure, your night that Gwen Stacy died moment is because of him and me. He's gone. I'm now
new Joker.
I'm basically new Joker. And he doesn't have to be Joker. I don't want him to put makeup on and do and substitute Joker. It's more like Joker's dead. And the boy I trained and really killed did it. He is exactly thrown away every single lesson I've taught him now, and he's my villain. And don't like try to push him into Joker's spot. Just be like that spot's empty now. And because, you know, and then have Superboy punch reality or something. Like, who cares how you
know what? That's a great choice. I will tell everybody out there, and I don't know if you know about this, Sal, you can find some documents about this. Apparently, Chuck Dixon, before he left the Bat titles, like, right before Batman No Man's Land or after Batman No Man's Land in the early 2000s.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, he pitched an idea to kill the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this idea that they were going to kill the Joker. They were going to do this miniseries. It was going to be about the death of the Joker. And then they were going to leave the Joker off the table for like 3 years to build him back up.
That's the way to do it.
And DC apparently said, no, we can't take the Joker off the table that long because of merchandise and blah 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 blah. But I'd always been told, and this might be a complete rumor, so if this is false, listeners out there, please tell me. I'd always heard that there's that later storyline called Joker Last Laugh or The Last Laugh. I'd always heard that that was the title of that miniseries and that they liked it so much that they were just looking for another way to use it again.
That would make the most sense, and it would have been a great ending.
So, but there you go. So this, Sal, this is some pretty good list, man.
Thank you. Yeah, you too. I was not surprised by how impressive your list was, man.
I like that you got Mad Hatter in there. Okay, so everybody out there, if you are interested in some of these Batman villains, we will have choices, prime stories. I know we said that there weren't a lot of good stories for all these characters, but there are. We will find them, and if you want to read them, all you got to do is go over to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, and we'll have some choices on there. You can click on our little widgets. It'll send you to Amazon. You can buy the book, and a little bit of that will come back our way and support the Mind University. Sal, this was a great conversation with you. I know you do great conversations on your YouTube channel and your podcast every single week. Please tell our listeners, where they can find you online. Where are you on Twitter? What's your YouTube channel? Give it all, man.
You got it. All right. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Get your pens or your keyboards ready because you need to go to youtube.com/comicpop for all your comic pop needs. If you are not a visual person, you can go to Spotify and find the Elseworlds Exchange. You can also find us on me on Twitter at Sal Says What. What do I say? Find out on Twitter. And we're everywhere else you can find it, like Instagram, Comic Pop Official, Facebook, Comic Pop Official. It's all there. We got plenty of opportunities for you to share your opinions and, of course, enjoy that which we make here at Comic Pop.
Yes, and everyone, I know Sal's been on the show before, but I would highly recommend, if you're a new listener, going check out the Elseworlds Exchange. That was a podcast that if I could be on it every week, I totally would. But
we would have you back, man, anytime.
I love being on that podcast. Such a great conversation. Speaking of great podcasts, this is ours. And if you want to go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever they're calling it now, and leave this podcast, Geek History Lesson, a 5-star review, we will read your review on the air. So I have 3 of these, Sal, if you don't mind. Ooh. I'm going to take a brief minute here. We're almost a year behind on reading these. These are from October of 2018. So we're now going to start doing 3 a year to hopefully catch up. Okay. I could set the goal of getting through these by the end of the year. I know that's not going to happen. So we're just going to go with it, guys. All right.
Don't lie.
So the first person to be welcome to the honor roll, the Geek History Lesson honor roll, is the Tay Z, who says, I'll be honest, I don't listen to all the episodes. Hey, man, I only listen to episodes on the characters I want to learn about, and I feel guilty for not listening regularly because Professors Jason and Ashley are top notch, said the Tay Z. Note, if you guys read this, check out Papaya Planner by Carla Escobar on Kickstarter. I think it's cool. I think that Kickstarter is probably over.
Probably over.
So I apologize, the Tay Z. The next one comes from S. Gordon 1126. I've been listening to the show for a long time. I just listened to the Wonder Woman episode the other day, and I was crying because I was laughing so hard. Love the show so much. Keep up all the hard work. Thanks, S. Gordon. And the last one comes from GenG0127. They say, Jason and Ashley managed to entertain while passing on information needed at all these geeky cocktail parties. I look forward to new episodes as well as Jason's Wonder theme songs. Oh, yes. I do a lot of theme songs and singing. I didn't sing much on this podcast.
No, not today.
Although Bane did make an appearance. So so the Tay Z, S. Gordon 1126, and GenG0127, thank you so much for leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to be like them, leave us a 5-star review. It helps the podcast in search algorithms. We'll also read whatever you write. You literally could tell us we suck. We will read it on the air. That's how this works. I've gotten some emails from some international listeners because this is only the American version of Apple Podcasts. If you want to leave us a 5-star review and you do not live in the United States, take a screenshot of your 5-star review and email it to us at geekhistorylesson@gmail.com, and we'll read it on the air as well because we want to make sure your international fans are getting out there. So
hey, you can't discount that.
What's that?
You can't discount the international audience. It's
no,
crazy.
No, we actually, you know what? We have a strong contingent in Australia.
Same here.
Specifically.
I really want to go.
I do too, man.
We should go have these.
We should. We should just do it. We should do a giant, man, if we could like business trip it together. Like right? It's the Geek History Lesson Comic Pop live show.
Oh, dude.
But we'd specifically have to go to Perth because I can see from our analytics that there are a lot of people in Perth, Australia that listen to Geek History Lesson. So all our listeners in Perth, good day. Thank you. I hope you weren't offended by that. Also, lastly, if you want to support this podcast more, we have a Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. That's the only place you can hear the Geek History Lesson Extra podcast. That's where I'm going to steal Sal away for an extra 10 minutes. And today's topic is going to be, are there any other Batman villains that could lead solo movies? Just like the Joker. So I think it's going to be a really great conversation. And if you want to keep this podcast free to all of you, that's the perfect place to go. We got lots of great stuff, including our video series, Crisis Club, which is a 12-part video series. Each episode's over half an hour long, guys, where we dissect each issue of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So you can be ready for that giant crossover. Patreon.com/Jawin is where you're going to do it. Sal, we're finally in the last section of the podcast. Hashtag stick around. That's where we see if people stuck through the plugs. I'm going to ask you this question right now.
All right.
What's your favorite Joker story? We shelved Joker. We didn't talk about him. We agreed that he was number one. Is there a Joker story that really sticks out to you?
Hmm. I mean, my gut reaction was Killing Joke, but it's his first story technically. So, like, does that really even count? Yeah, you know what? It's by Alan Moore. I'm going to go for it.
Sure.
I have the oversized Absolute Edition. It is so great. I always find something new, unless Brian Boland recolors it, in which case it's not nearly as good. But I always find something that I really like about it, like something new or something special or something unique. Because I don't really care about it. Like the Joker, I don't find him compelling. You know, I find him like scary. He's a character device. He's a plot device.
Yes.
But that story was the only one where I was like, oh. I guess as a runner-up, there's a story. I think it's called Going Sane by D. Mateus. That was really excellent.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Mine always comes to the finale of Batman No Man's Land.
Ooh.
Where what they did is they shelved the Joker for almost that entire year.
Yeah.
And he only showed up in the finale.
Yep.
And in the finale, it's the idea that and it's a little bit of Batman Returns where he decides to steal all the babies that have been born during New Man's Land.
I know what.
and he tries to kill them all. But it's a story of the Joker running around stealing babies. I agree with you. Yeah, the Joker is not that compelling. He's more compelling from a visual side than a character side, I think, because he's just pure chaos, right?
Exactly.
But the image of Joker stealing babies, this maniacal clown stealing babies, is has always stuck with me.
Yeah.
And of course, that's the storyline where Sarah Essen dies as well.
Exactly. That was such a... It was so unexpected and such a gut punch.
I cite that as the greatest Joker murder ever. And why I say that, because if you remember in the story, so she's there, she's found the basement where he's keeping all the babies. She has the gun on him. He tosses a newborn infant at her.
Yeah.
So she drops the gun to catch the baby and he shoots her.
Yeah.
And then I think the baby still falls to the floor arms.
She softens its blow. Yes, like she keeps it from like dying.
But that's the strength of the Joker to me, is like that's where you're just like all the Joker ideas should be like, oh, my God.
Absolutely. No, if when Joker's played for laughs or when he's like, for me, one of the worst Joker stories is Emperor Joker.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And it's just. Because he's not really when you make Joker a cosmic level threat, like you've lost me and you've lost Joker. Like you're not telling a story about Joker anymore. So, yeah, no, that you should always be shocked or disgusted or at the very least, like, you know, like uncomfortable by what the Joker does or says. Ooh, there's that great moment. I loved it. It was in Snyder and Capullo's run when they think Joker can't die and when they think he's like immortal. I guess it's Endgame.
Yeah, I think you're right.
When Gordon shoots Joker down in his apartment, and then Joker just like, and it's the scene where like Joker like comes out from under his bed. Ugh, that was good. That was some great Joker horror. That worked out really well.
All right. Speaking of something that worked out really well, Sal, thank you so much for joining us on this Geek History Lesson episode. And thank you so much for, I would say standing proud in Ashley Slott.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. These are big shoes to fill, and I really appreciate you letting me stand in them for a little while.
She's probably going to be really mad. She's probably going to be really mad that you stretched out her shoes. Anyways, thank you, everybody, to listening to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Joker-tastic Inman. This has been your Geek History Lesson for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and class is dismissed.